friends, welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Stoker. How are you, Adam Stoker?
I'm doing fantastic, Stuart. Doing really good.
Just
thank
given
you
up.
For asking.
I've abandoned any kind of creativity on the introduction. Is that all right?
Yeah, I'd love to have a witty response as to why that's par for the course, but I can't think of anything.
I guess it's late in the year. You know, this is our second recording today. Both of us are putting minimum effort, but
yeah,
that's okay.
I'm at Christmas already.
There you go. But you know who's not going to bring minimum effort? This is one of the MVPs of the first 50 episodes. I'm hoping he's going to be an MVP of the second set of 50 episodes. This is a guy that we probably have quoted on this show more than most, and a guy that I've heard people at conferences come up to me and say they really liked his analogy because he was the guy that coined the phrase, although he may have stolen it from someone else. We're going to give him full credit, but the red pill, blue pill analogy for how the destination marketing world treats data right now. And we're sort of living in the matrix of the blue pill, but he's trying to take us out by telling us all to take a red pill. But welcome back to the show, Zeke Coleman. How are you?
Thanks, Stu. I'm great. I'm feeling good. This is a privilege. It feels like this show has exploded. As I told you, I loved Brad Dean's episode, and I'm a regular listener, so it's cool to be on here.
You're a Desti, man. We appreciate you listening, and we couldn't do it without people like you and the conversations that you're willing to have. You know, one of the things after you're on last episode was people saying, I can't believe a guy that worked for Tourism Economics would say something as controversial as the fact we're all addicted to the blue pill, right? And so the candor, the bravery that you had to come on the show and say that, hopefully you didn't get too many slaps on the wrist from the team, but I think it's a great conversation. I think ultimately it's what we're all trying to do is, right, we're trying to demystify some of the data and really try to effectively measure what we're doing. And I don't know if you listened to the last couple of episodes, but Adam's coined a new phrase where he says we're built for the illusion of relevance versus the actual impact that we're having. And so
I like that.
I think what you said way back in the early episodes was akin to that, you know.
Well, and in fact, I think vanity. It sparked that line of thinking for me. It kind of changed the way I've thought about it since then. So I really appreciated that, Zeke.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate being back on. We don't know what the topic really is today. And so we're going to do Stu's news in a minute, but I'm going to tease the topic before we do. But you came to us and said you have an announcement to make, and it's going to be seismic and game-changing. And, you know, you earned the cachet with us from your last performance that we're like, okay, we're going to trust him. He might be an evil vendor, but we know he's not going to come and just sell a product to the industry. He's going to come with a meaningful, impactful conversation. So that's what we're going to do today. But before we get to that, I don't think last time you were on, we had the jingle was not a real thing, I don't believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think you were early enough because you were like in the first 10 episodes maybe. So I don't know. I might be wrong. Might have to go back and listen to it. But it is that time. Either way, first or second time you get to hear it, it is time for Stu's News.
And I want you to know that I was lacking a little bit and for some reason did not have it queued up and ready to go. So
is that because your kids kept playing it and you were tired of them playing it? Like you mentioned
yeah,
last episode.
Maybe so. Here we go.
You're sharing your whole screen right now. I can see your emails, everything. It's amazing.
Oh, let's change that. Let's stop that immediately. See, this is where I was as background. Okay, hold on. Oh, here's the problem. All right.
Yeah.
Ready? This is much better. Thank you for telling me that, Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the internet now.
Yeah. The good news is I'm looking now and I don't see anything that concerns me. So that's good.
I think I can blur out on YouTube when I publish it if you need me to. So
just to be safe, I'd prefer you did, if you don't mind. I don't want Stu's News to be my desktop screen.
Well, because of your snafu, we didn't get to really pay attention and enjoy the jingle, but that's okay. We've enjoyed it plenty over the years.
Yeah.
Today's Stu's News is this landmark case that happened in Australia this week. And so they're the first country to do this, but they banned social media accounts on restricted platforms for anyone under 16. So there's a lot of people talking about the damage that social media is causing, especially for youth. And we're seeing all kinds of high profile cases where folks are, you know, committing suicide, or they're having this bullying, or like sexual exploitation that's happening with minors. And so this is, I mean, I think this is seismic. And I think it's the first domino to fall. They're basically saying if it's a platform like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, where there's restrictions, they can't have an account. There's certain places they can have accounts, you know, if there aren't restrictions, like let's say a Roblox would be an example. But the burden, the really interesting part of this is the burden is on the platforms. And the platforms can get massive fines if they're not doing everything they can to protect. So I think what's going to be interesting is in Australia to look at account numbers over the next couple of weeks as Facebook and others start shutting down people that they know to be underage. And then obviously there'll be a response. The kids will probably try to get around some of these restrictions as well. But I, you know, really interesting. I think long overdue from my personal opinion. I think I have having a kid, two kids that have really grown up in a social media age. We tried to wait as long as we could, but there was just so much pressure on parents, and we really didn't know a whole lot, you know, 10 years ago or so. My kid's now 19 and 17, right? So they were getting social platforms. I think we let him around 13 or 14. In hindsight, that was too young. You know, I think they didn't know what they didn't know at that point. And so if I had it to do over again, I would probably have waited till 15 or 16. So this is really interesting that the government in Australia and the community seems to really be embracing this. And I'd love to ask you guys, Zeke, I'll start with you. Like, what are your thoughts on this? And do you see this kind of legislation come into the US?
I actually do. I mean, I don't have experience with it. My kids are kind of sheltered a bit in their, co-op private school environment. And none of the kids that they go to school with, I mean, they're homeschooled, so none of the kids they go to school with are on social either. So they just have no idea. It's ignorant bliss. But I will say, I agree that if they were able, I wouldn't let them. I think it's about accountability, and I think it's interesting. I feel like the last 4 years we've been afraid to state the obvious, and I think, I'm about to say something wrong, so I won't say anything else. I'll just say that
Hold on, that's what this show's for. Let's go.
accountability is here. I'll say this as an African American, I really appreciate the focus on DEI and on making sure groups are seen, but I also understand how delicate it is and how, because of that, people were scared to say anything that maybe is wrong with some of those movements and groups. And so seeing this, it's like it's a moment where the government is saying, we recognize it's bad for kids and you can't have it. And that's, to me, that's cool, and I want to see more of that.
It's gonna be interesting to see though, because America's sort of a different place, right, than Australia or Europe or really anywhere else, where the sort of individual civil rights seem to be hold more cachet here than other places. When you look at like Second Amendment and First Amendment and stuff like that, like you don't really see that as extreme in other places. So it's going to be interesting to see the discourse that happens in the US over the groups that are inevitably going to be saying, hey, this is up to the individuals. This is up to the parents to decide. It's not up to the government to mandate, you know, the more libertarian types. But Adam, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. And you've got young kids and you're going to be making these decisions soon.
Well, I'm in an interesting position with a lot of components of this. My oldest daughter is 14, and then I've got an 11, 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. And yeah, you're right. I've got a lot of these decisions to make. And we actually didn't allow my daughter to have a smartphone until she turned, I believe she was a little older than 13. And she's 14 now. And we haven't allowed her to have any social media or anything like that. And to be honest with you, I don't even like the idea that she has an iPhone. But I think I got worn down a little bit. I also have a tendency to believe that the government is not as good at being involved in things as they purport to be. And so I usually lean towards less government involvement, no matter what it is. However, when I look at what they've done, I'm a little bit disappointed in the United States of America for not being the first to the party on this. And I actually think that part of the reason that the United States of America is not first to the party on this is because of the capital loss that there's going to be by not allowing these young kids on social media. And there's an entire cohort of buyers that you don't have the ability to infiltrate early as a brand. And I really believe that there is so much harm being done to kids through social media at an early age. And the level of addiction that adults get when their brains are fully formed, what that does to a child's brain could ruin them for life. And so I am 100% on board with this decision. And I believe that one of the government's roles is to protect its people. And I think that this move, while some may argue that it's a free speech overreach or a government overreach, this is entirely designed to protect the next generation who's going to be responsible for progressing the nation forward. And I love that Australia did this, and I would love to see the United States get on board as quickly as possible to protect our kids.
Yeah, wow. You took a pretty hot stand there, and especially as someone that tends to politically lean closer to libertarian, I think that's really indicative. I'll be honest, I've talked to probably a dozen people about this. I haven't found one single person yet on the other side that says this is a bad idea. Now I'm sure people will, and I'd love to have that conversation with them about why, but I think these platforms are built to create addiction, right? That the algorithms are very much designed to hack our neural system, right? Through dopamine and serotonin, and they know what makes us tick, and they optimize for addiction. And so you're right. There's plenty of adults, some listening to this. Even us at some certain times maybe are guilty of this, where we get consumed or doom scroll on something. And so for children, especially where their brains aren't fully developed, that frontal cortex is not developed until 25, 26, it's we're doing a disservice to our children to expect them to be able to behave appropriately when we're giving them a drug that is more addictive than heroin, right? And so it's no wonder we're running into some of the challenges we are with attention and with, the way people communicate and all the challenges we're seeing. So, yeah, I kind of wish my kids were younger and I knew some of what I know now then, because I would have definitely done it different. I would have waited longer for the cell phone. I would have waited longer for the social media, definitely. And
Can
even
I?
now, I mean, we still have conversations. My 17-year-old and I had a really deep conversation this week about his cell phone use now, right? And how is he consciously, mindfully making decisions about how he uses it, or is the device leading him, or is he leading the device? And so, I got him to admit that he had an unhealthy relationship at times with his cell phone, and we sort of developed a strategy, a plan together to help him mitigate some of those risks, So it's a serious conversation.
Well, and I think it's awesome that you're leading your son that way, because left to their own devices, I don't think it changed. I think it's a
Is that a
loop they
pun,
can't
by
get
the
out
way?
of.
Left to their own
Left to their own
devices.
devices, didn't even
Yeah.
think about it, but yes,
That's
totally
excellent pun.
intentional. I want to speak from an industry perspective, because I do think that there's going to be some people that say, well, hold on a second. We need to be building relationships with these kids as early as possible as a destination and inspire them to visit our destination. And who knows, maybe people say that, maybe they don't. But I just want to say, I think we will be much better served as an industry if the kids are more conditioned to get off the couch and go outside and do things and take action than we would be if they were just married to their phone screen. And so I do think that what we may lose in possible attention with the younger generation by not having access to them will gain in having kids that grow up with a more propensity to take action.
You're not, she clearly suggesting that DMOs have a long-term view of outcomes versus a short-term next 12-month view. Surely, Adam, that's
I know
heresy.
I've never brought that up on the show
It's
before.
heresy. No, I agree. I mean, it's a dilemma, right? Because we certainly understand as marketers that children can be influenced, and we also know that children have a massive influence on the travel decision. I was literally on a call in between our two recordings where the gentleman I was talking to said they were coming to Myrtle Beach this summer because he gives the option to his 9-year-old son where to go. They go to a beach destination every June, and he asked his son where did he want to go this year, and he said Myrtle Beach. And so my instinct as a Mocktail is like, why? You know, what influences led to that decision on him, right? But then the other part of me, the human, the parent side of me, is like, whoa, what are we doing here? We're trying to manipulate children into coming to Myrtle Beach. So I think there's a whole ethical conversation to have around that. But yeah. Any additional insight from you, Zeke, before we move on to your big announcement?
I just thought that maybe the US, if you take data privacy, Google, the EU forced them to, sort of abandon the cookie deprecation thing, and they kind of leaned in and doubled down on GA4 and basically said, okay, well, we're going to anonymize and model all traffic. So I do wonder, although I think there are bigger, as Adam alluded to, cost implications. Like, I can't advertise to get your kid to buy digital, inventory or Roblox or whatever it is they're buying these days. I think that'll be a deterrent, but I do wonder if whether the government acts or not, if they just say, you know what, across the globe, we're doing this, we agree. I don't think they will, but I do wonder.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and I think Europe will probably do this before the U.S. does, would be my guess. There's a massive overcorrection happening right now. You know, GDPR and some of the restrictions there, and I can speak really to the U.K. because I still have family there. My brother's a teacher. They've gotten so strict on their privacy. Like literally, right now, if you're a teacher and a student creates any kind of work, like they do a paper, an essay, and it has their name on it, you cannot leave that unattended. You have to have their work on your person or locked up at all times. You can get
Oh.
fined or fired if you leave in the UK if you leave kids' work unattended. Like that's how far the privacy laws have gone in the UK, right? Which is crazy to me in living in the US. So there's this overcorrection that's happening in the other direction, right? And part of that's market forces working and saying, hey, if we did do all this stuff with cookies and other things, how are we going to target our audience and how the platform's going to make money and blah, blah, blah. But I worry a little bit that EU is swinging faster back in the other direction. But because that's the trend right now, the pendulum is swinging back that way. I do think there's going to be this will be a part of that where the governments will step in and say, hey, let's do this thing, because I think we're going to have an impact here. So watch this space. I think Australia is the first domino, like I said. I think others will follow suit pretty quick.
And good on them for being willing to be first.
Yeah, for sure. Was that meant to be a joke? Because that's like a phrase that Australians like, good on you is like a common phrase in Australia.
Not that deep, Stuart.
See, that's twice I thought you were being funny and you weren't. So I'm going to just stop assuming you're trying to be funny.
Never attribute intelligence when ignorance can be applied.
This never true was spoken by Adam Stoker. All right, Zeke, we're going to hand you the keys, man. You got this big earth-shattering red pill announcement. You want to do any preamble and set it up?
Yeah, I kind of do. Yeah,
And
I think
can we tell the audience, like, legitimately, Adam and I don't know what this
no
is. Like,
idea. You really
we're going to
don't,
react
yeah.
in real time. So this
Yeah,
is going to be
and in the
fun.
pre-call, we ask, do you want it real time or here? So or yeah, so yeah, I'll set it up just a little bit. First I'll say I love my current role at Tourism Economics, VP Americas. I love the team and I've learned a ton and I've been committed to research. I've kind of valued it more. One of the things that I've gotten to do is be on the front lines of defending funding. So when there's a funding analysis or someone is at risk, we get that call and a lot of times they say, is there anything you can do in 2 weeks to explain how important our existence is? And generally that will result in an analysis of their funding compared to other like-sized DMOs, where if they lose funding, then that market will lose market share, and it's a lot harder to get that back. Or it'll be a maybe a lodging forecast, and we're doing analysis on how market forces are impacting their ability to book rooms. If you lose Canada and you're on the border, the northern border, that impacts you. Or it could be any number of things. And so I've seen that, and then I've also been on the DMO side where I sat in a seat, and at least for a little bit, our funding was at risk, and I was terrified. I was thinking, like, when, I asked, how soon could we lose our funding? And the response was, well, they couldn't do it in any sooner than a year. And I thought, I could lose my job in a year. So that kind of impacts me. But when this opportunity came up, it felt unique. At first, I was like, I don't think this makes sense for me. When they explained it more and their commitment to transparency, I thought, this is a unique time for this kind of message. And I think every company that is in this space that I'm about to share should really commit to the same sort of mantra and ethos in light of the way things have changed, the way our world has changed. And so I'll just say the name. So I'm going to become president of Adgenuity. You may not have heard that name before. That is a,
Yeah,
you
I
know,
do
sort of a
know
media,
Adgenuity.
yeah, a media company. I think they're, you know, looking at the books, because I did get to look at the size of the company and how much media they do. It is the biggest unknown company in our industry. It is really big, actually, in terms of how many billions of impressions they run. They're unique in that they have a seat on Amazon. Not a lot of companies can say that. And so they can leverage all that really rich, you know, purchase data for targeting. But the thing that intrigued me was they said, Zeke, we're not actually doing this company to make like a ton of money. And I was like, what? That doesn't make sense. And they said, no. What we're doing is we're committed to transparency. We're committed to low margins. We're even committed to sharing what our margins are. We're committed to premium inventory, fraud mitigation, and waste mitigation. So we're not, you know, buying, you know, this blog that has 45 ad placements on a really long page and wasting all of your money, right? Like, we're not going to allow Brand USA, for instance, to be on sites that aren't brand safe. We're going to make sure that we have double verify. We pay for that so that your ads aren't being seen by bots, right? People don't even. So when you talk about the red pill and blue pill, one of the red pills that I kind of want to throw out there is that stuff's happening. And I have a couple of points, like reasons I made my decision that I think will be compelling to the industry. And I think every other media firm should commit to these same sort of standards, because our clients, and I feel this in my role now at Tourism Economics, if we do not have defensible research and if we don't equip our clients to be believable, then they're going to lose their funding. And guess what? Now we don't have any clients or partners that we can do business with. So it's kind of a it, we're biting the hand that feeds us by giving subpar you know, products. And I'm not saying that everyone does that. I think there are companies that do good work. I'm just saying that the atmosphere has changed, the era is different, and the bar has been raised. So I'll stop yapping for a second to get
Wow.
any reactions.
That's huge, man. So just I'm gonna ask a couple of questions on behalf of the audience. So you're leaving your role at Tourism Economics, just to be clear. Is that right?
Yes, that's clear. That's
Yeah.
clear. I will become Tourism Economics' biggest research client though on day one,
Okay. Nice.
because Adgenuity does third party
Yeah. Oh,
attribution.
and when does this take effect?
Yeah, my start date is January 2nd, so it's at the start of the
Okay.
year.
Well, Adam, we've got a new sort of role in the industry now. We're breaking like
Yeah.
hot breaking news on this show, and this is a place people are going to come and make these kind of seismic career shift announcements. So Zeke, I would say you're like doubling down on your commitment to taking the red pill, is what it sounds like to me. Is
I
that
am,
fair?
man. I am. Yeah. It's funny. I told my wife, I was like, if they throw a bunch of money at me, I wouldn't do this, because I love Tourism Economics and I love the team and I'm committed to how we're doing business. And they didn't. I'm taking a slight haircut. And but I believe the mission so much. I was like, okay, yeah, I want to be a part of this. I want to help tell this story. I want to build this. I want to assemble the Avengers to go out and because I think this is a unique time in our industry where it actually matters in terms of
Yeah.
funding.
Now, I'm sure you've wrestled with this. You know, we just did an episode last week with Diane Chono on our team talking about is the click dead, right? Like the whole concept of paid media and the challenges that it faces. And you sort of alluded to some of it, right? There's a lot of garbage out there where people are putting low quality impressions out and claiming victory on that. So I'm sure you wrestled with this a little bit. Like you got to believe that there's a future for paid media if you're making this leap. But talk us
Yeah.
through that thought process a little bit.
Yeah, let me give a shout out to TTRA and the Marketing Outlook Forum. So they do this thing where and it's very effective, where they upload their email list from previous years and they just do retargeting. And I see their ads all over the most premium sites. And I had already decided I wasn't going, but they are the conference that is most top of mind for me right now. And now that I'm going to Adgenuity, I actually will go. And I was even thinking of, maybe I should go to MOF. But it was an eye-opener for me because I was like, this is really effective. Like, if you target the right people and if you're seen on quality sites, like if I go to a site that's an ad farm with like all kind of banner ads everywhere, I don't pay attention. But if I'm reading a news article and at a pivotal point I see your message and it's a positive message, it does impact me. And I think in with AI, attention is at a premium. And when you are on a site, this is where ads are probably going to explode. There's a study, I can't remember, shoot, what the who did it, but it actually predicted that advertising spend's gonna, I think, increase by like 25% or something like that next year. So be partly fueled by AI.
Yeah, I definitely think we can get more sophisticated with it. What about, obviously the LLMs have not come out right now with any kind of ad platform, right? I think that the smart money is on some point they will. They'll find a way to not just charge users a subscription, but they'll also make money on the front end through the consumer data and doing advertising. But Sam Altman came out this past week and said, because Gemini and others have overtaken them on the LLM front, that they need to double down on their core mission and forget all this superfluous stuff like chasing ads. They need to get their core the LLM to be as competitive as the others. And it sounds like they fast-tracked ChatGPT 5.2 for that reason, right? So we're in this space where sometime in the future, the web ad framework as we know it, as consumers begin to shift from websites to chats or some other kind of large language model interface, like website traffic is we're seeing on DMO sites going down, but it's not just DMO sites. Like a lot of people's sites are down. So potential impressions is going down. So I think to your point, having more targeted, having a sharper sword in targeting people more effectively is going to be a critical part in our future when it comes to the tech stack. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. I think, yeah, it's all valid. I think, let's just say, like, if all I'm trying to do is hit an impression number on an RFP or a plan, then transparency doesn't matter and integrity doesn't matter. But if integrity matters, then what I'm going to do is have core tenets that scale. And I'll say, if the only way that I can get in front of your audience is to do, like, if it's a meeting planner, 5,000 impressions, that's not going to make us much money. Probably won't cost you much money. But if I'm being honest, then I'll still do that campaign and I'll do it wherever we can. And it doesn't hurt me because I'm not in it to make the most possible money. I'm in it to operate transparently and efficiently. So I don't think it hurts us to say if AI lowers the amount of impressions or whatever, if your mission is to do good work.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about, one of the other things that we've always talked about and you talked about is we're not selling the end product, right? As DMOs, we're sort of an intermediary on the journey, and we're often sort of focused on this building awareness or attention, we prefer to call it these days, in the consideration. But then the actual transaction often is happening somewhere else. Sometimes we can track, sometimes we can't, depending on where that is. And there's also components of the spend that don't even happen online, right? They're happening once someone's in market at a restaurant or an attraction or something like that. So it's not just the lodging, but how are you guys thinking about that, or how will you be thinking about that with Agenuity in terms of how do we close the loop on that for DMO specifically? Like how do we show more of the incremental true value and lifetime value of customers that we just don't have visibility in a real way today?
Yeah, this is where my seat at Tourism Economics is pivotal, right? Like, I know the top secret projects we're working on, and I know, like,
Can you
we're
share?
also
We broke some news today. You want to break some more news? It's top secret project.
I'll say that I can't share it, but there's one that's it's got a funny name, and every time they say it to me, I'm like, can we just call it this? Anyway, but yeah, there are some cool things that they got cooking. But I will say this, because Today at TE, we're measuring billions of impressions a year. I mean, I think this year we could be at 9 or 10 billion, something like that. We have, or actually, crap, it's probably more than that. We have visibility, and this is across mountain destinations, beach destinations, cities, West Coast, East Coast, countries. I can't even say some of the countries, but like, we recognize we're going to have a unique pool of data and intelligence to understand marketing in a way that maybe hasn't been done, at least for our kind of industry. And going to Adgenuity, I hope to benefit from that and say, hey, TE, I know you're cooking up, this project and that project. I want insight. I want to use that data in order to help plan the absolute best media. In terms of incrementality, one thing that we do at Tourism Economics is with that attribution tool, we have a control group, and we look at our point of reference is your destination. You want to get them from where they live to your place. Well, a phone is a perfect little tracking device, right, that we can use as a proxy for visitation. We don't track all of them, but we have enough, a big enough sample, bigger than survey data, to see what is the amount of movement you're making with your ads, right? But we know that some of those were coming anyway. So we compare the movement of those that saw your ad to those that didn't and still came. And the
Right.
delta between those two groups is our
That's your
lift.
increment.
And then that's run through an economic impact model. And there's other, factors, like we ferret out UPS drivers and pass through traffic, and you have to have a certain dwell time, and it can't be like a student or relocating military person. Like, there are all these things that we use to make sure it's defensible, but that's critical to the media space. And again, I would challenge every firm to have third-party attribution. Don't grade your own homework. Don't, you shouldn't be the one saying that you're great. And then to have a defensible methodology that you can explain to your audience. I think that's critical.
That's great. Adam, I'm sure you've got some burning questions for Z.
Yeah, I've got several questions. I mean, I think first of all, I heard of Adgenuity years ago because it was a Utah company, and they, I believe they got acquired just as I was getting into the destination marketing space. Is Miles the one that acquired them back in the day? Okay.
That's correct.
And then I hadn't heard their name for years until Mina Robertson announced that she was taking over a large responsibility over at Adgenuity, and that kind of rekindled for me. And she's like, more to come, some big moves to come. So I clearly this is one of the big moves to come. I would love to have you, for those that may not be maybe like me and didn't hear about Adgenuity for several years,
Sure.
to say what it has evolved into specifically and what makes it different than other organizations.
That's great. Yeah, great. I'll also throw out that last week, I believe it was last week, it was announced that Stephanie Dunford of Sojourn also is joining Adgenuity. She'll be, I believe her title is Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing. And so that's huge, right? You have a the leader, the sales leader at Sojourn. She knows everything Sojourn. You've got a former marketing leader at Adara and research leader at Tourism Economics and DMO person who bought media for 10 years and bought from everybody. And then you've got Mina, who's an industry stalwart, has been in the game a long time, really well connected. And other, like, the team there is phenomenal. I mean, you're talking, when I talk to Rachel Root, she, I believe, by the time this airs, her announcement should be out. So hopefully I'm not spoiling it, Rachel. But Senior Vice President of Operations, she basically makes all the promises that we make come true. What Adgenuity has become is, what I understand is Miles realized that they had less control over how quality, I'm Visit Savannah, and I would place media, and then I would see my own media in market, and I was really frustrated because that meant my stakeholders could, and now I'm going to get in trouble because we're not supposed to spend money in market. And I told them, I need you to exclude Savannah. Or I told them, this is an airport campaign, but in Google Analytics, I got people coming from Jacksonville. It's like nobody's flying where they could drive an hour and a half. So that kind of stuff is problematic. And I think what Miles saw was, hey, we need a little more control, and we need to be able to offer our clients a service that isn't about making any money. It's making enough money to keep this going. And so where they are today is, whereas I've worked with companies and bought from companies where their floor margin is 60%, meaning of a $100,000 campaign, they keep 60,000. That's their floor. That's the minimum. We were aiming at times, or they were aiming at times, for 90%. Like, it's interesting. And if you think, like, in order for me to get 60% margin, let's just say, I have to buy blog traffic. I can't afford ESPN and Hulu. Doesn't mean I don't do it. It just means I have less of that. What Adgenuity is doing is saying, we're going to have 10 to 15% margin, and we're going to prioritize ESPN, Hulu, Amazon, all the premium stuff. Anytime something premium comes out, we're going after that stuff, so that we, Miles can't say, hey, you have to work with Adgenuity, but they can present it and say, this is an option with quality. Now, here's the thing, right?
Hold on,
And
can
I'm,
I stop you
oh, go
before
ahead.
you provide
Go
that
ahead. Go
clarity?
ahead. Yeah.
Is one of the red pill moments here that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in some of this digital ad buying that results in just complete garbage traffic and waste?
Yes.
And that some are taking a 60% margin and then after that margin buying the garbage traffic as a result.
I'm going to get in trouble. I cannot say that some are doing that today. I can
But it
say
has
that
been done.
it has totally been done. Yeah. And so here's the thing. And I'm not faulting anybody. And I'll be honest, if Adgenuity hadn't presented me with this concept, I probably would join a company and keep doing that. I mean, I would, you just don't know what you don't know. Everyone's doing it. So yeah. Now that I know, what my challenge to the industry is going to be is, everyone be transparent about your margins. Show your margins. What did you net? It's not hard. These are public companies, or not-for-profit companies. They have public funds. They're under scrutiny. It's reasonable. Now, I don't think anyone's going to do that overnight. My mission over the next couple of years is going to be to apply pressure through thought leadership and to educate the market and say, here is why that's important. And, I'm here to help you to do just that and just be as transparent as I can.
Well, I'm going to
Yeah.
make a statement and you don't even have to respond to it, but the fact that we've got so many destinations fighting for relevancy and trying to convince the stakeholders that they have that they're doing a good job, to know that on the back end of that, there's people making a 60% margin and not buying solid traffic and impressions and things like that. It's disappointing to hear that because we're in an existential crisis, and if that were to continue, it would actually be one of the things that fuels the existential crisis, doesn't help solve it. So I like that you're looking at it globally. I mean, look, I'm an agency, right? And we absolutely still buy media. The
You have
idea of,
60% margins when you're buying
oh
that
my
media then?
gosh, do you know if I had made 30% margins on media buys, I think I would feel like I was a thief in the night. And so to hear that number kind of blows my mind, and I agree with you 100%. I don't think it's appropriate for today. Maybe it was something that worked in the past or whatever, but I'm glad to see that you're going to take the lead on changing that. Let's put it that
Well,
way.
and I think it's fair to say, like that it's that's you're sort of pointing out one challenge in the ecosystem, but it's only one, right? There's multiple. I mean, we've all seen bad actors on the other side, and because there's a lack of visibility and transparency, it's hard to catch this. But I've seen ads for other destinations where there's like five of the same ad on the same web page, and they're counting five impressions, five
Yes.
separate impressions, but it's like, that's that they're not all equal impressions, and that's such a redundant waste, Or I go back to that same website 20 times over a course of 20 days, and I'm getting the same ads every time. There's a lot of that. The publishers are as culpable as anyone else, right? And you've got challenge on the publisher side, publishers on the sort of the exchange side. And you got challenges on some of the agency and the buying side, right? So I think the whole ecosystem has the potential to be wielded using smoke and mirrors. And I think the challenge is also on the DMO side, because a lot of times We're not asking the questions because we don't want to know the answers, because all we care about is the vanity metrics that make us look good, and to reuse Adam's phrase, because it's helping us with our illusion of relevance. And so I, for one, encourage everyone to start taking this red pill and say, let's start asking the hard questions, the awkward questions, with the knowledge that we might find out that what we've been doing isn't working. And we got to have the courage to stand up in front of our stakeholders and say these kind of things, knowing that the risk is there. Because if we continue to operate in a status of fear, which is what most DMOs operate in, worrying about our funding, worrying about this other stuff, it's inevitable. We're going to be out of business. So we've got to have the courage to say, hey, we're doing things differently, and here's why. And so that's what Visit Model Beach is going to be doing, and hopefully other destinations are too.
Yeah, I think the Doge effect is a real thing. I think it's here to stay. I don't think it's a right-wing phenomena. And I mean, we've seen in red and blue cities where they take funding because if you have a deficit because Canadians aren't coming to your city right now, taking $20 million from a DMO budget makes you look like a hero. And by the time everyone realizes that was a bad economic decision, you've gone on to be in Congress or a senator and it's too late and
You
nobody
will live the
remembers.
consequence. For
So,
sure.
totally agree. Yeah, I had a page. I remember, dude, I place ads and beautiful. I still love this ad that we had of the Savannah Fountain. But I went on this site and I don't remember why I was on this site, but it was a like a blog or something. 25 ads stacked on each other of my beautiful ad on one page in Savannah. Targeted out of market. I clicked it, and because I tagged it with UTM codes, I was able to see who it was. Called him immediately, screenshotted it, and was like, "What is this? Like, I want to make good immediately." And they fixed it, but it's like, how much of that is happening? Like,
Yeah,
I
that you
hate
just
that,
happened to
right?
see it. It was
Yeah.
two levels of incompetence. One, they're running the stacked ads, but then two, they didn't geographically block out Savannah. So two levels of incompetence got them caught. But if they just done had one level of incompetence, you would never have known it, you know?
And you would have had 25 more impressions to put on your report to your stakeholders, right? I've been talking a lot over the last several years, and in fact, this won't surprise anybody. I've been talking a lot about why I think owned media is more valuable than paid media. Today, what you've led me to believe is that I have to add a caveat that owned media is more valuable than garbage media, and that I think efficient and well-placed paid media is going to be very, very competitive for the long term. And I don't know. To me, this is a little bit of a wake-up call for me that it's not paid media that's causing the lack of performance, but it's the way it's been done for a
Wait,
long time.
you didn't get that message loud and clear when Katie Briscoe pummeled you to the ground in that
Well,
episode, where
listen,
she
I don't know
basically
if
made that
Katie's
exact
using
same point.
Adgenuity or not. I can't speak to
But to defend folks like an MNGY, right?
that.
Like, we use them, and they use different platforms. We place stuff in variety of different places. But we're very deliberate. That team that we have at MNGY and us, we work collaboratively to make sure that every ad is effective. And Diane even talked about this last week, really trying to figure out the full funnel. It's not just an ad showing to someone. It's, is it the right ad to the right person at the right place at the right time? And then, are we delivering on the promise that the ad made? And is that experience the right experience? And does it lead to the ultimate outcome? So I don't want people to hear today that every agency in the industry is doing a shyster job, right? Because that's not the case. So there's a lot of reputable people. There may be some out there that maybe are taking advantage of DMOs' naivety or lack of wanting to know the truth. That's probably fair, but I don't want to tarnish everyone with that brush, because there's a
Totally.
lot of really good, honest brokers out there that are doing a good job.
And I would say even, some of the things that they're not stacked, right? Like not everyone takes a big margin. Not everyone buys crap media. Probably all of us have some crap media and some issue with margin. And it depends. But the reality is that the good ones that are doing a good job, I guess my challenge would be, let's all talk about it and let's be honest and let's be open and let's make sure that the market knows that you're doing as good of a job as you're doing. And that's not even an Adgenuity thing. That's just a, hey, for the
Yeah.
sake of our friends on in this nonprofit, not-for-profit world, we kind of owe it to them in their time of distress.
Can I
Yeah, for
ask
sure.
you a question then, Zeke? Because
Sure.
Stuart said something really important and said, like, obviously, there's really good, solid players out there that are doing a great job. So, what I would like is we've got a lot of DMOs listening that probably have some questions after our conversation today, questions for their agency partners. And I want to know from you, what are the questions that DMOs should be asking so that they
Yeah.
can get to whether or not they're getting a good product?
It's a great question. Yeah. I have a couple of questions that I've been thinking about. So the first is, are you willing to share with me the margins of the partners that you're spending money with? Is there any way that they can share that? I suspect the answer is going to be no, they'll never share that with us. But I think DMOs re should realize they have a lot of power because they control the purse and they really can get that. Just like initially, firms didn't want to share log files and they didn't want to share, more granular reporting. Now they do. And now they understand they have to do that to do business. So that's the first is, are you willing to share your margins? The second would be, are you paying for fraud mitigation? So again, think about this ad ecosystem. There are robots, there are non-real, non-human things that crawl sites and go to pages. There are ways to detect that those things are not human, but they cost money. So an example is DoubleVerify. So, but that's costly, right? You have to pay money to have that on every campaign, and that takes from the ad budget and your margin. So my question would be, do you have a service to mitigate fraud like DoubleVerify? Are you paying for that on our campaign? Not have you paid for it before? Can you show me that you buy DoubleVerify when you run our media? Again, now more impressions to actual humans. That's another question. Another question would be, are you aware of a company called Fiducia who does a study and can do analysis on waste in your programmatic media? So Stuart alluded to this. There are, I like to think of it like real estate. When you buy a house, you're the buyer, there's a seller, they own the house, you want the house, and there's middlemen. There's a real estate agent and a buying agent and a selling agent, and there's a broker and all this stuff. The same way with the internet, that space on that site on ESPN wants to sell you that real estate, that house, so to speak. You want to buy that house, you want to show your ad because this person's valuable. To make that happen, you have middlemen. A DSP represents you, the buyer, and SSP represents the publisher, and they all talk. But there are other middlemen taking fees in the middle. And this fiducia company did a study, and they found $26 billion in waste in advertising annually in their study. And so we did a study and kind of went head to head with another firm, and we were found to be very, very efficient at minimizing waste, meaning we don't have all these unnecessary middle players. We add in a double verify and we make sure that the spend is good, is efficient. So I'd say, do you have, a way to evaluate and audit yourself? And can you show me that you are operating? How are you operating efficiently? Because at the end of the day, all of us can place media. And then the last question, or I would say maybe last two, are you on brand safe sites and buying premium inventory? And everyone's going to say yes, but can you kind of show me, like, can you pull a site list? You're going to see some crap on everybody's plan, but can you do that and prove that you're not wasting or not putting us in weird places with 25 ads down the line? I think those couple of questions would probably be a start for me.
Yeah, I like that. I think what that's going to lead to is transparency that causes elimination of hidden incentives.
Yes.
Because one of the issues that I've talked about in the agency space is that if your incentive is to generate a media commission, then you're going to recommend higher and higher media spend. If your margins are clear, which we've actually gone away from media commissions and gone more to media management retainers for that reason. And I really feel like if you won't share the margin, I think what you're doing is demonstrating hidden incentives. And it's fine, but you need to identify that as a client and ask those questions. I think those are really good questions that you've identified to ask.
For sure,
Yeah,
for sure.
I think understanding those relationships between your agency and the publishers or whoever the broker is that they're buying the media through, sometimes it's direct, sometimes it's not, is really important. One way you can mitigate it a little bit is by being the purchaser yourself. Like as vi at Visit Myrtle Beach, we buy most of our media direct. Now we use MMGY to actually negotiate deals for us, things like that. But for the most part, we're paying the vendor directly for the actual media spend. That's one way to mitigate it. But I grew up in the agency world, and I saw situations where, the agency is charging the commission. They're also charging and making margins on the actual technology that serves and measures the ads, and they're making margins on the DSP side. And they're making margins with the publisher because they're getting a net rate or kickbacks, right? And so you're stacking margin on margin on margin. And I think those days are gone, right? I don't think right now, as every DMO is getting squeezed and our budget's under attack and the economy is not doing great and international travel's not happening and COVID money's gone. And I think now is the time that the agencies that instead of trying to hide where they're making money and try to double down on that, the ones that go transparent with us and become real partners and actually work with us collectively, they're the ones that are going to gain market share. They're the ones that we're going to have long-term relationships with. The ones that are looking to make the quick buck or try to make the margins they maybe used to kind of make and try to automate stuff and eliminate human intelligence from the process. Those are the ones that will maybe do well in the short term, but they're going to be gone in a couple of years. So
Agreed.
I love what you're doing, Zeke. I think this is obviously a big career move for you.
Yeah, congrats.
And
Thank you.
yeah,
Yeah.
congratulations. Big responsibility, but I think now's a great time because our industry needs folks like you that have morals and ethics and are guided by sort of higher moral principles than just trying to chase the dollar. They're actually trying to make impact and change on the industry. So, tip of the hat to you, my friend. And thank you for coming on the show and sharing this news. That means a lot to us too. We'd
Thank
love
you
to
for
have you
having me.
back at any time in the future, especially once you get your feet under you and have like a sort of more of an idea of where you guys are heading and where the industry's heading and how we can all collectively be a part of the solution. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I would love to. Before I do, I'd love to plug my colleagues and say if you get a chance to talk to the two women that I'll be partnering with to lead Edgenuity, they're super sharp. Stephanie Dunford and then Rachel Root. So if you
Yeah.
can ever have them, they'd be a great.
Send them our way, but tell them to come with
Yeah.
a good opinion, a
Tell
pet
them you got a
peeve
top
or a
yours.
strong topic,
That'll be easy, but yeah.
we might not let them do quite such a sales pitch on their company or what we do
Sorry,
here. Like
sorry.
we let you have a little latitude because you're such a friend of the show and being a great guest, but
Feel free to edit it out. I won't be mad. It's
no,
okay,
we're gonna
but
keep
I
it
do
in.
think the, you know, yeah, the
No.
overarching message is what I'm after.
No, we appreciate it, and we wish you the best. And I really was saying that tongue in cheek, but I'm also saying it for any other vendors that are
Yeah.
listening. We're not going to open this show up to let people come and sell from the show. That's not the intent. But if you have a strong opinion on something, or you have a vision for the future, which is obviously what Zeke has, he wants the industry to be better tomorrow than it is today. And I think he's swallowed the red pill, and we're trying to get more people to swallow the red pill. So we appreciate you, Zeke. If they want to find you, learn more about you, where can they do that?
Probably best on LinkedIn. Best place to, shoot me a message and yeah, glad to chat, get a cup of coffee. And I'm on the circuit, so if you see me at a conference, don't be a stranger. I'll buy you a drink.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I'm glad you're still going to be working with TE and they're going to be able to tap into your brain a little bit because my guess is you're going to be able to push them in ways that you couldn't in your current role, right? Because you're going to see it
Correct.
from a different perspective. So I think that just,
Totally.
I'm sure they're sad to see you go, but I'm sure they'll continue to benefit from your talents, which is great. Adam, they want to find you. What's the best way to
Find
do
me
that?
on LinkedIn, Adam at thebrandrevolt.com, or of course you can find me on Tourism IQ.
Great. And for everyone, all the Desties listening, I'm going to be putting up a post on LinkedIn. It should be up by the time this episode airs, but I'm asking people, what is their prediction for 2026? We're going to do an episode. We're going to do a couple of episodes at the end of the year, beginning of the year, where we talk about our personal predictions. But also, I want to do one. What does the industry predict is the future? And that can be anything from governance and funding to marketing trends or whatever you want it to be. And we're going to boil that down and sort of see if there's any patterns. And so go to LinkedIn. I'll have a post under Stuart Butler. I'm sure Adam will reshare that. But we're looking for you to tell us what's your big prediction for 2026. So go do that, and we'll give you a shout out on the show. And Adam might even sing what your prediction is if we ask him really nicely. I don't know. We'll see.
How about this? I will commit to singing the best one.
Oh,
Oh,
wow.
yeah, I
Gauntlet
like
has been
that.
thrown. And
Yeah,
how will you judge the best one? This is Adam's opinion, or?
probably whichever one rhymes the best so that it'll sound really good when I sing
All right, so we're going to ask people to use ChatGPT to put their predictions in rhyming form, and Adam will sing them on the show. That sounds great. Thank you all for listening. This has been another great conversation. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.
Well, congrats, man. That's
Holy
amazing.
cow. I was not
Yeah.
ready.
Yeah.